I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Diane Senior. She's a member of the Rural Conservation Alliance. Kim Sorvig, who is a research associate professor of architecture and planning at UNM, and he's an expert on sustainability and ecological impacts. And Jan Willem Janssens, who is president of Ecotone, and he's an expert on wildlife and watershed issues. And we're here once again to talk about La Bajada Mesa. Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
And La Bajada Mesa is not only a place, but at this point, a political issue. Before we talk about what has happened when you were here a couple of months ago and what's happening now, remind us where La Bajada Mesa is and what's going on there. There's a proposal to do some mining there.
Right. So La Bajada Mesa is, most people are familiar with it from their drive on 25 going from Albuquerque to Santa Fe. And La Bajada is that very last steep hill that you crest as you're coming into Santa Fe. You hit the top of that hill, you have the wide open expanse of the top of the Mesa and Santa Fe beyond. It's been a part of the landscape and an important part of New Mexico's history and culture for centuries. It was the traditional dividing line between northern New Mexico and southern New Mexico, and a significant hurdle on the Camino Real. And that is the mesa that's currently under threat of a gravel strip mine that basically proposes to take this very prominent landmark and reduce it to rubble for road base.
So you were here a few months ago, and we'll recap some of the things that we talked about, and there also have been some developments since then. But what happened at the hearing that we were talking about last March?
The hearing was a phenomenal experience. Your listeners and people throughout the county responded to the call to come out and let the county know how they felt about the Mesa. Hundreds of people turned out for the County Development Review Committee hearing. That is probably unprecedented to have that size crowd for that type of meeting. One of the committee members.
They were keeping people outside the room because the fire marshal was not going to let that many people in.
Interesting.
We must have had almost double capacity.
Yes. And so what happened was they actually asked people to leave the hearing room. The fire marshal asked them to exit. They spilled over into conference rooms that had been set up with TV monitors for people who were waiting to come speak. And then there were people actually even downstairs and out into the street. So the public response was incredible. And almost 50 people got up and spoke for 2 minutes each to give their positions on the value of the Mesa to them and to the county.
And it's one of those issues where pretty much everybody who shows up at that meeting, except for the landowners themselves, have the same position, which is that they don't want strip mining.
Correct. Not a single person who spoke at that hearing, aside from the applicants themselves, spoke in favor of the mine.
So who owns that land?
The property is owned by a company called Buena Vista Estates, and the company that they've contracted with to do the mining operations is called Rockology, and they're a firm based out of Albuquerque.
And in order to do that, they need permission from the county of Santa Fe?
Correct. So Santa Fe, currently the property is zoned for residential and agricultural use. And in order to permit gravel mining, they need to request a new mining zone be created. The property is currently not zoned for that, in spite of the fact that they currently have it listed on the international market for sale as 5,200 plus acres of aggregate.
So specifically for mining.
Specifically for mining, although there's not actually the permission. Now, I thought that the big hearing last time was going to determine whether that permission was to be given, but in fact, that's not the case. There's another meeting, which our friends here at the table are calling people to go to, and that's on Wednesday, the 11th of June at 4 o'clock at the Santa Fe Convention Center. What's the difference between the last hearing and this one?
Well, it's a three-part process when somebody applies to the county. The first thing is that the county staff go through the application with a checklist to see if it meets minimum legal requirements, and if it doesn't, it's thrown out. If they determine that a project meets those minimum requirements, it then goes on to the CDRC. That was the one we were just talking about.
CDRC.
County Development Review Committee. I got that right? I can never quite remember.
Acronyms.
Thank you. So the CDRC meeting was the one that just happened this past March. And the CDRC, as the name says, is an advisory committee that will vote to recommend that the Board of Commissioners either deny or accept an application. They don't have the power at the CDRC to make that decision, but their recommendation goes on to the commissioners who make the vote.
So and what was their recommendation?
5-2 against accepting this proposal, and that is the third time that one or another group of county officials has told these applicants no. So our first question is, what part of no don't they understand?
Now, this is the third time, and yet it goes on, and each time there are changes in the application, and there have been some changes this time since we last spoke.
Yeah, the change right now is that actually the most important change for the audience to know is that the potable water use has been changed to reclaimed water use, or basically effluent that they're going to use for dust control.
So they would use effluent for dust control. Does that make the whole thing better?
No, it's still water, and we have a shortage of both potable water and effluent.
We have an effluent shortage?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. There is an entire list. The city came out with a study in April last year, 2013, of all the potential uses of effluent, and they show that in the late spring and summer months, we have a clear shortage of effluent, so that various uses of that effluent cannot be met. And so if we continue to use or allocate effluent for purposes like this one, other water uses cannot be met. And on top of that, this is then for 25 years, knowing that Santa Fe grows, knowing that we will have water shortages for potable water, groundwater, and everything that we have, our claim on the reuse of reclaimed water or effluent will increase, so that any water that we have is important, effluent or already treated potable water.
Who is using effluent now?
Well, I've got the list here. And before we go to that, I think maybe for some listeners we ought to define what it is. It's often called wastewater, and that is a totally wrong-headed term. It's not waste in any significant sense. Effluent is water that has been reclaimed from sewage by a careful process of treatment. It can be treated to one of three levels. At level three, it is drinking water, and if you have been in a big city in the last 20 or 30 years, you have drunk treated effluent out of the tap.
Ah.
Many, many places are reliant on treating their sewage to the point that it comes back to a drinking water standard.
Yeah.
And unless you research this, you will not know that that's what you're drinking. It's what's in the tap water. It's a bit gross to some people, but it's absolutely a fact of life.
Well, I was in Europe one time and was told, I haven't verified this, but that water that melts off the top of the Alps goes through seven different human bodies before it gets to the sea or something like that.
That's pretty normal. It is widely used, and one of the most important things about this switch, which is, as far as I'm concerned, mostly a public relations switch on the part of the applicants, is that one of the main uses that the city of Santa Fe and the county expect to have for treated effluent is future potable water supply.
Yeah.
They're going to stop treating it only to level one, which is where we are now, and they will treat it to level three standards, and it will be part of our drinking water supply. So anything that is used for less than intelligent reasons, the intelligent reasons are for agriculture and horticulture. We use it now for maintaining public parks and recreation grounds. But anything that's used for less than those ideal reasons is really wasting this water in the literal sense.
And what would it be used for in the case of strip mining on La Bajada Mesa?
Dust control, as Jan Willem said.
Dust control.
Well,
yeah.
But only to dust control pertaining to...
the machinery.
No, to drivable areas. Because yeah. I've been to these mines because my profession brings me to quarries because I need rock for river restoration work. So I see also how aggregate is being treated. And typically what they do, they spray the areas where the big trucks or the big equipment drives. But a lot of the dust that is created in these processes comes from a periodic blasting that cannot be mitigated. And then if they load or stack aggregate material, huge smoke plumes come up off the trucks or the equipment that pile that stuff up on a pile.
Smoke meaning dust.
Dust, yeah. Sure. And so, and then once it's again picked up and loaded, the aggregate, into trucks, another huge plume of dust comes out of that, to the point that within 20 or 30 feet, there is zero visibility. And so with a little bit of wind, these plumes go up hundreds of feet, and it's definitely visible from a long, great distance.
And not only visible, but a public health and safety hazard, because the blowing dust can carry disease. We have things like valley fever that are contained in our dust, those microbes and spores. We have the problem, one of the horrible headlines in a very recent Santa Fe, New Mexican article actually talked about a crash that took 6 lives in southern New Mexico because a dust storm hit a highway. We're talking about 50 acres of disturbed soil in a very, very windy area just adjacent to I-25. That is a safety hazard. And we're talking about an area that they are not required to control what is termed fugitive dust, which is the dust that is generally blown off of disturbed soil areas.
They've talked about stockpiling the topsoil in order to supposedly reclaim the mine, which is a very difficult thing to accomplish. But they have shown on their drawings that the stockpiling is going to be done in one giant pile, which is convenient for them. It's not the best practices that landscape architects use. You have to stockpile topsoil in small piles, or the weight and compaction of the soil kills the soil organisms, and when you go to spread it back out, it's dead soil. If it's dead, it's also dusty, and so the whole pile can blow away. And they're addressing that in their so-called dust control. In fact, one of the things they show on their plans is silt fencing. It's that 2-foot-tall black fence that you see around construction sites. And it's supposed to control silt, which is water-borne small particles, and it filters it out. There is no way that that controls airborne dust in the slightest, but that's what they're showing on their plans.
Now, I think we talked about this last time a little bit, but let's recap this. What kinds of legal regulations, if any, are there concerning dust?
The regulations around dust are shockingly minimal. The EPA does not control, as I just mentioned, what is termed fugitive dust. That is dust, the dust that we see every day kicked up by dust devils, blown by the wind, that kind of ambient dust, the dust that is very prevalent when you have areas of disturbed soil. As anyone who's driven on 14 near the prison in the past several years when we have our windy conditions. What is controlled and what they are required to regulate is only the dust that is created by the machine that crushes the rock. So the machine that takes the stone and crushes it into gravel is what is regulated. Beyond that, there are no, even if you talk to Mines and Minerals, they expect people to work by best practices, but there are no guidelines as to what those are.
We're talking to Diane Senior, Kim Sorbig, and Jan Willem Janssens about La Bajada Mesa. Let's talk for a moment about, just following up on what you said, living soil and dead soil. What does that mean?
Living soil is soil that has biological activity in it. A square foot of a soil under your feet has billions of microbes in the first couple of inches. And so they break down organic matter. They also are part of living organisms that hold soil particles together. The mycelium that is basically fungi that creates living organisms or a living structure and network that absorbs water, holds things together, and forms a basis for new plant growth and regeneration of plant growth in that soil mass. Once it's depleted of those microorganisms, soil really turns into dust.
And so what kind of plants do we have growing in that area of La Bajada Mesa now?
We currently have grass plants and specific forbs that are typical for the grassland environment of that landscape. And I've looked at some documentation from UNM that identified classification of wildlife habitat, and it appears to be a relatively diverse plant community. I don't know exactly how many species and all that.
Right.
I've not looked into those details, but it is a relatively well-preserved grassland.
And let's talk about wildlife that walks across that grassland and eats that grass. Who's there?
Well, it's actually the entire Galisteo Basin, which is to the southeast beyond it, and the Rio Grande Valley to the northwest or west of it, are very important wildlife corridors for the state and for actually at a continental level, because we have bear, cougar, bobcat, deer. Those are the larger species, and from time to time, if there was enough water, we probably would see pronghorn there as well. So those are the largest species, and especially the first ones that I mentioned, use that area as a migrating corridor to go from the Galisteo Basin west to across the Rio Grande to the Jemez Mountains, or north-south from the Sangre de Cristo Mountains, following I-25 more or less, and all the draws, the arroyos next to the highway, to find their pathway towards the southwest to the Ortiz Mountains and the Sandia Mountains.
I think it's really striking that we use I-25 and they have parallel corridors where they go to get where they need to go.
Isn't
in order
it?
To live their lives.
Absolutely, yeah.
Isn't that also part of the flyway that the sandhill cranes use? It's on the edge of that big flyway that connects Bosque del Apache to Nebraska?
Right. The Rio Grande, I understand, is an important flyway. And then there are parallel flyways to that, too, 20, 30 miles away from the Rio Grande. But yes, it is it's a flyway as well. But of course, this area is not particularly known as a migratory bird area. It's mostly an area for mammals.
And to note what Jan Willem said about them using the drainages as part of that, it is very important to note that the mine site itself is flanked on two sides by drainages that go down to the Galisteo River.
What's a drainage?
So drainage is the areas that are eroded coming off the front of the mesa that bring water down into the Galisteo. So the mine site itself sits within the Galisteo watershed. It's flanked by two of these drainages, which are natural pathways for the animals to use as part of their migration coming up from the river area. And this mine site sits directly between, very, very near to both of those drainages. And this is an area that's going to be blasting, grinding, heavy equipment, night lighting, all things that are going to drive animals away from those natural migratory paths.
These drainages are important for another reason. The hydrology of the area is quite important. Anything that runs off of La Bajada Mesa eventually ends up in the Rio Grande, and possibly more importantly, a part of what runs off will end up in the deep aquifers that are under the river. And those aquifers supply water to something like 50% of the state's population. So anything that gets into the runoff from this site is very likely going to end up in those aquifers to some degree.
Are there issues of toxicity?
As far as I know, basalt is not toxic except as a dust. There have been cases of basalt workers who've been poisoned by the stuff in the same way.
Breathing it.
Yeah, asbestos poisoning is the same kind of syndrome. But as far as I know, it's not toxic if you get some in your drinking water. But there are other things, including the chemicals that are used. I note on their plans that they have a diesel supply tank that's shown right in the area of their stormwater holding pond, right in the middle of it. Diesel is not a good thing to get into your aquifer, just for another example.
To go back to the issue of wildlife, what really is important for everybody to understand is that with a mine like this one, we're adding one more component that fragments the landscape. So a landscape is a continuum of forage areas, of flow areas, of a genetic pool that gradually has to, or disperses itself, that spreads itself across the landscape so that after periods of drought or fire, areas that have been impacted can be regenerated, can regenerate itself by the seeds that are that come down there, or by animals that reoccupy an area. I-25 has already created a major barrier for animals to cross. Many animals die crossing that highway. Water flows are impacted by the highway. We have carved up northern New Mexico with highways, with cities, with water lines, with all kinds of infrastructure that has seriously impacted the potential for seeds, for plants, for animals to move across the landscape and therefore to reoccupy new areas that have been impacted. And as a result of that, certain areas after being impacted only grow weeds and have much greater difficulty to recolonize with native species. Other areas will be overgrown and won't have grazing happening, so that plants grow up and don't have natural, you could say, mowing that happens to the animals, so that once they dry out in a dry year, are much more fire prone. Uh-huh. And so the dynamics that are typically occurring in these landscapes are interrupted by this fragmentation that depletes the genetic diversity, and with that, the chance for a landscape to heal itself. And therefore, over time, chances for a landscape to just turn into dust increase. And on top of that, most people came to Santa Fe or live here or stayed here, if they've been here for many generations, because of the special character of this landscape. It's a beautiful place. And if we continue to add more and more infrastructure, construction, and especially a wasteful mine like this to beautiful landscapes, we're loving it to death. We're loving it and at the same time destroying it.
I think it's really insidious, because anybody who does a project might say, well, why are you picking on my project? But it's the sum total of lots of projects, of lots of developments that fragment a landscape to the point where it is no longer a viable landscape for the wildlife on it.
Exactly. So the question is, where do you stop? And from my point of view, this is a step too far. And it's especially a step too far because it's in a very characteristic, iconic part of Santa Fe County, where you enter into the Santa Fe area or where you exit into the beautiful viewshed of the Rio Grande and Santo Domingo Pueblo on your way south.
And the County Development Review Committee recognized that themselves. The one of the folks on the committee, Frank Katz, when he was making his recommendation to deny the application, basically boiled it down to say, "This he's not against gravel. He understands that that's necessary and it's part of our construction industry. But his position was, this is just not the place for it. this is a central part of our landscape. It's central to wildlife habitat. It's valuable, much more valuable to us whole than it is in pieces.
And as we talked about last time, this particular type of stone, basalt, is very common. There's other places where you can find basalt besides this one location.
If you ask any geologist or consult any geology textbook, you will find that basalt is the most common type of rock on the planet. There are basalt mines in every country on the face of the earth. It is supplied by at least one and I think two mines in Santa Fe County and many more mines throughout the state of New Mexico. And, in fact, I believe it's the state that has production statistics. They show Santa Fe County producing more gravel than we have actually used. So the idea that there is a need for this mine is definitely private profit motivated and imaginary at best, in my opinion.
So we have excess basalt and not enough water.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a proposal to mine basalt using water.
What could go wrong? Yeah. You asked earlier who was using the reclaimed effluent. I'll just give you a sampling. They have a list of about 16 different commitments that they have made. The Municipal Recreation Complex, Marty Sanchez Golf Course, the recreational field at the Downs, Southwest Area Node Park, an educational landscape that's maintained by New Mexico Game and Fish, some other parks and open space, and then the Living River Project for the Santa Fe River. All of these rely on already committed use of that effluent. If this company or other companies come in, they are basically saying, we have money, we get to bump people who have previous commitments. That's not the normal procedure to my way if you're trying to be fair about allocating a resource. It's to say, I have more money than you, I get it, even though you have a commitment. But that's what is being proposed at this point.
Was it you who said the phrase, water flows uphill toward money?
Well, I wish I could take ultimate credit for that, but I think that may be Lew Wallace, the governor that wrote Ben-Hur. In New Mexico, water flows uphill to money.
So one of the things that's worth noting is we're talking, Kim just listed a bunch of commitments that we already have for that water. Keep in mind that those commitments are not currently able to be met. There are shortages currently just to meet those commitments.
Right.
And for the water that's allocated for what they call on-demand purchase, which this would be, the proposal that the applicants have in during the peak months of operation would consume 5% of the available water for that, just for themselves, just for that one project. Think about the rest of the county. So this is an extravagant use of a very valuable resource for a project that most of the community does not want.
Now, and that there's no real economic use for either, right, except to make one private company happy.
Now, is there a limit to how much water they're asking for or would use?
No. There are actually two things involved. One is that they went to the county to buy potable water, which is what they presented to the CDRC. That was the vaguest letter I have ever seen in my life. It said, we're willing and able to supply. There is no term limitation. There's no amount limitation. There is no limitation on what it can be used for. And interestingly enough, as far as we know, they haven't canceled that request, even though they are now also asking the city of Santa Fe for this treated effluent. That letter is slightly more specific.
It's the only thing that the letter limits is how the water can be used because of the potability or non-potability of the water.
Yeah, you mustn't use it for potable purposes.
Right, so there are limitations on what it can be used for that purpose. But in fact, the letter, it's not even a letter, it's basically just an application that allows them to set up an account.
Yeah.
So for $100, they have now set up an account which permits them to go buy water, this treated effluent, from a standpipe. And there's no limitation on how much water they can purchase. And there is no guarantee that they will get the water. which actually is a requirement of the code, that they provide evidence of water availability.
Adequate to do what they're proposing to do, which they have not done since their first attempt in 2005.
And in fact, the application itself states that there will be times when water will not be available. Sometimes that's because water, they've overcommitted, and sometimes that could be because the water has failed its treatment standards and can't be discharged.
Now, one of you, I think, mentioned the number 25 years. What is that? This mine would be, if it were approved, in operation for the next 25 years?
That's what their application says.
It's very interesting because when we run the numbers, the amount that they claim they will take out, which they want to downplay to make it sound like it's less impact, doesn't work out with the 25 years. They're going to take everything out of that 50 acres in, what did they figure, five years?
5 years.
So they have downplayed this by a factor of five. And in my professional opinion, that is typical of everything they've submitted. They've lowballed every statistic that has an impact on whether people would like this project to go forward.
Yeah, I think it's important that we actually stop for a minute and actually examine those numbers, because by their calculations, what they're saying in their application is they're going to be in operation for 25 years. And they say that as partly to convince the county that the county will get economic benefit out of it, because they're claiming that there will be gross receipts tax. We can actually prove that their estimates of gross receipts tax are fantastical, let's put it that way. But over 25 years, the county would say, well, that might be a significant source of income for us. But if you look at the production numbers that they're proposing, it's actually impossible for them to get the amount of gravel that they say they will be selling out of the amount of land that they're saying they will be mining over a 25-year period. It will be 5 years of either 5 years of economic benefit for the county, or after that five-year period, they are going to ask for an expansion. And that's where you get into the fact that this does not seem to be a good faith agreement with the county, because their first application came in, not theirs, but the very first application from the property owners in conjunction with another firm, actually requested permission to strip mine 2 miles of the mesa. They scaled it back to 130 acres in a subsequent application, and then to the 50 acres where we are now, and they're now reapplying for that same 50 acres. This is a foot-in-the-door strategy. They prove it by their own numbers in their own applications. It's not sustainable either at the production numbers they're saying or for the duration that they're saying.
And this is where you come back to that international real estate ad in which they are trying to portray this as 5,200 acres of mine that they want to sell. They're, as far as we can see, trying to establish a beachhead and get the county to make the foolish mistake of giving them permission for 50 acres, whereupon they will argue that, well, now it's a mining area and we can take the whole thing.
We're talking to Kim Sorvig, Diane Sr., and Jan Willem Janssens, talking about La Bajada Mesa. And one thing that I'd appreciate if you guys would just clear up really quick is, you talk about city water, you talk about county water. Are they separate?
No, those water sources, let's clarify it. We all have one source of water, that is the water that's under the ground or in the rivers coming from the mountains or down to Rio Grande. And the city and the county are collaborating to use that water, purify that water, and the city is largely actually selling it to the county. The county has a small utility, the city has a big one, but they're planning for that same water. They call it a conjunctive use planning system, where they use at multiple, where they look at multiple sources at the same time and come up with the best way of combining those sources for the longest duration of water security for our area.
This is actually a good idea when it's done well, but if you start making the water available to the highest bidder without considering whether it's being properly and appropriately used, then the idea that you're planning for the future becomes a little laughable.
Now, we've talked a lot about water and about dust and about wildlife, but let's talk about just pure aesthetics. What would this mining project do both during its duration and after it was over to that landscape, which, as you guys have pointed out, is kind of the gateway to Santa Fe when you come up over that hill, or the descent when you're going the other direction?
Well, initially, when they're working in the first couple of years, there will be a scar visible. They work then on the first plateau, and that is the highest visibility point from I-25 and specific locations that have been identified where you can see that mine. After that, the real operation is kind of sunken away in the landscape for many locations. However, things like night lights, dust plumes, issues of noise will all be perceptible from large distances. The equipment will largely be also sunken down after several years in that hole. It will be only from very specific locations that it is visible. But still, the side effects of it will be visible directly from I-25 if you pass it. It's just only half a mile south of I-25 at that point.
Well, and it's not only I-25, because
that's right.
From several parts of New Mexico 14, this would be visible.
Yeah.
From the Waldo Canyon Road, it would be visible. And this is direct visibility to the mine, not the side effects, the plumes and the lights and so on, which are really quite significant.
And many residential areas to the south as well.
Yeah, there are plenty of residences that are going to be impacted. Not only that, but the Camino Real, the Spanish road from Mexico City, runs up La Bajada, and from that you will be able to see the mine in certain locations. And that is a major both archaeological and or historical and tourist feature of this landscape that is going to be impacted visually by overlooking this mine.
Are you talking about Route 14, or what is the Camino Real in
The Camino Real is the historic road.
I know, but what is it? Like, how do you get there from here?
It's a walking path at this point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And it's an historic, it's a part of New Mexico's history. And part of the reason that the mine site would be very detrimental to that is the part of the goal of preserving the Camino Real is preserving the viewshed and the experience, and having that interrupted by heavy mining equipment, by truck traffic coming in and out, by the dust plumes, by the night lighting, by the tailings piles or the gravel piles that will be visible. That's a significant impact on that, not to mention the noise and the blasting, because even if you could turn your head away, you're not going to be able to close your ears to that. And when we're talking about these visibility impacts and what it does to gateway entrances, the gateway to the Galisteo Basin parklands and the gateway to the highly sustainable economies that come from things like the Cerrillos Hills State Park is significant, because the Waldo Canyon Road has been earmarked by the Cerrillos Hills State Park as their gateway entrance to that parkland.
It's hard to calculate the impact economically of aesthetics. It's something that we as landscape architects often try to do, and I think there are limits to how much you can. But the applicants have submitted one of their, we think, inflated numbers, saying this is going to create X number of jobs. It's single digits.
And seven.
Seven max. That's their optimistic guess. And this is supposed to be a big economic benefit to the county. And they've said, well, there'll be some tax benefits. And it looks like that is unlikely, because the product will be sold out of the county, so there won't be county taxes, and so on. What's easy to forget is that La Bajada is actually already earning money for Santa Fe, and has been for probably a couple of centuries. Whenever you think of tourism starting, basically, La Bajada has been a part of it. The Fred Harvey tours took people up and down La Bajada, which at the time was actually the original route of Route 66. And they would take people on that road to go visit the Pueblos. So there's a long history in which the experience of going up and down that that escarpment and seeing the view out over the river valley below, or when you're coming back up, seeing Santa Fe in the distance and Santa Fe Baldy, those are a part of what attracts people to this city. And we have consistently high ratings around the world. We got somebody signing the petition from, what was it, Romania?
Bulgaria.
Bulgaria. Yeah, well, they're going the way of the Ukraine, I suppose. Anyway, we hope not. But we have had people from that far away who are upset enough about the idea that La Bajada would be torn up and made into gravel that they have contacted us to sign the petition against it.
And it's worth noting that the response from the public is overwhelming. At this point, we have well north of 6,000 people who have signed our petitions, either online or on paper, and that is still going strong. For folks who have not yet signed the petition, I urge them to visit the website at www.savelabajada.org. That's SaveLabajada.
SaveLabajada.org. You know, I mean, you said a moment ago that you can't put a value on aesthetics, but, you know, there are property values. And I know the people who want this project done, who own the land, I mean, it's, you know, this permission will make or break their property value in a certain way, but everybody else's property value in that area will also be affected the other direction if something like this were to happen, I would guess.
And one of the people who got up to speak at the first hearing was actually a real estate agent who was able to come in and talk about the fact that she has already had people who walked away from deals because they saw the signs and they saw the banners and they said, what do you mean a strip mine? Nobody wants to live there.
Yeah.
So that has, and while it's hard to quantify what it means to actual property values, we already have a market that's depressed and it's already struggling to recover. And by adding something like that that is going to discourage people from moving into the area, that hurts the economy of the county, it hurts the real estate market. And there's also businesses nearby that rely on the tourism.
Right.
And that rely, one of the people who got up to speak at that hearing runs an artist retreat right below the mesa. People are not going to come to an artist retreat to paint a strip mine. They're not going to do it.
So or even if they're looking the other way, as you say, listening to that strip mine. I mean, if you want to know what property values, what happens to property values in the areas of extractive industries, there's many examples throughout New Mexico and Colorado where there's either fracking or other kinds of mining. It's not good for property values.
Yeah. No, we've seen it also in the Galisteo Basin when in 2007, 8, 9, there was this looming threat of oil and gas development. It stopped all the real estate development in its tracks for many years. It's just recently picking up again. And I think it's happening now with this mine as well. And the region, the countywide impacts of a mine or resource extraction of that scale are very significant.
Well, I think we need to be very clear in echoing Frank Katz that we recognize there needs to be mining up to a certain extent if we are going to carry on with the kinds of construction and activities that people do. Doing it on the gateway to Santa Fe in northern New Mexico is not only unnecessary, but it would really be a tragedy. It would be a total loss. They're talking about a mine that is 60 feet deep in their 50-acre area. If they go to 5,000, I suspect they will expect to go deeper as well. That's the removal of the entire mesa.
Yeah,
this
so that
is
mesa.
Removal. Yeah.
Yeah, it's mountain, exactly. So
yeah.
The whole profile of that landscape would change.
Yeah.
Now, there is an event coming up, which is another hearing?
It's the final hearing.
It's the final hearing.
This is where the decision is made. This is where the fate of the Mesa is decided.
On Wednesday, the 11th of June, that's next week, at 4 o'clock at the Santa Fe Convention Center on West Marcy Street. And so what are you asking people to do?
We are asking people to come out in droves. Just as they came out for the County Development Review Committee hearing, the county heard their wishes and they acted accordingly. We are asking folks to come out for this hearing. This is the hearing that matters. This is the one where the decision is made. We need all hands on deck. The county has said in their ad that all parties will be heard, so anybody who wishes to speak has an opportunity to do that. One of the reasons why we are at the Santa Fe Convention Center instead of the county offices is because of the massive turnout that we had last time, where they actually had to turn people away. So please, let's have that same kind of turnout. We need your voice right now if you care about the Mesa.
Yeah, this must be a show of democracy at its best. And in addition to that, people can write letters and sign a petition. So those are the most three important ways of showing democracy at its best and to help determine the fate of the Mesa.
Speaking of democracy at its best, the county commissioners who will be making this decision are at least some of them facing re-election.
That's right.
Yep.
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm.
So this is an act of activism, so to speak, that you guys have been at for a long time. And one of the things that I think is important to point out is that while these activities come to the attention of the public from time to time, there's people like you guys working behind the scenes for not days or weeks, but months and years on this issue. And I think, you know, I just want to acknowledge all of you and the kind of persistence and consistency that you have brought to this and other environmental issues, all of you.
Well, we would love not to have to do that.
Believe me, I know.
Well, I can also speak positively toward it, that in the 10, 15 years that I've worked in the Galisteo Basin and throughout Santa Fe County, I rarely actually step to the plate to really show opposition. I've been working largely for positive conservation efforts by generating information for people that the county has picked up, woven into the oil and gas ordinance, woven into the county ordinance and the sustainable development plan that is being picked up for wetland conservation and stream restoration programs, now for continental wildlife corridor protection. And in cases like this, you have to step to the plate and also say, hey, because the community, because the county, because the state have endorsed the various efforts for conservation in Santa Fe County, whether it's archaeology, whether it's water, whether it's view sheds, they need to walk their talk, because this goes against the things that they have promised to protect. And we're working on continuous conservation of the beautiful landscapes, for instance, of the Galisteo Basin. And so after this action, it's just not only activism, we will continue to conserve what we want to protect in this area.
I just want to say it's very nice of you to thank us for this, but one thing that I've been consistently impressed with, both in working on the oil and gas ordinance and this, is the quality of commitment and thoughtful willingness to take action, take responsibility in this community. And I see that as having a relationship to the environment that we have. You are where you live, and you live where you are. And Santa Fe does that very well.
Diane Sr. is a member of the Rural Conservation Alliance. Kim Sorvig is Research Associate Professor of Architecture and Planning at UNM and an expert on sustainability and ecological impacts. Jan Willem Janssens is President of Ecotone and an expert on wildlife and watershed issues. Once again, the website is savelabajada.org. The hearing is Wednesday, June 11th at 4 o'clock at the Santa Fe Convention Center on West Marcy Street here in the capital city of New Mexico. Thank you all so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.